KALW.
I have spent a lot of time talking about Oakland and a lot about the subset of Oakland that come from West Oakland, and West Oakland fed into East Oakland.
The Kenneth Rainin Foundation just announced this year's fellows.
I think that in this moment, we don't all understand how beautiful and important the struggle song of Oakland is to liberation around the world.
Today, we meet one of them, Dr. Ayodele Wordslanger Nzinga. Then we'll visit a bookstore that's founded on a mission to serve the community.
For like Black and Brown folks, literature is medicine against these everyday nightmares in North America.
And we'll hear a reading from Berkeley author Adam Mansbach. Authors, poets, and bookstores. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Today, the Oakland-based Kenneth Rainin Foundation announced this year's group of fellows. The fellowship supports visionary artists working across disciplines in the Bay Area. Every member will receive an unrestricted $100,000 award, plus support tailored to address their specific needs and goals. One of the four fellows chosen this year is Dr. Ayodele Wordslanger Nzinga. In honor of Dr. Nzinga's new fellowship, we bring you our piece from 2021 about her appointment as the first Poet Laureate of Oakland, a title she still holds today. Reporter David Exume brings us her story.
We are here in the doorway amongst the jackhammers and cranes as the ground shrinks.
I think that Oakland has an interesting history that is not extremely well known or remembered, much like America has an interesting history that it struggles not to remember.
Flowing from and to the 16th Street train station, always and always building in the narrows, determined to live the narrative of us thriving. We are here.
My name is Dr. Ayodele Wordslanger Nzinga. And I recently became Oakland's very first Poet Laureate.
Can you hear us?
As Poet Laureate, Dr. Nzinga will, among other things, write a poem that commemorates the whole city. But as you can hear, it will not be her first on the place she calls home.
I have spent a lot of time talking about Oakland and a lot about the subset of Oakland that come from West Oakland. And West Oakland fed into East Oakland. This is a place where people came to be free. When they left the South with nothing, freed into nothing, leaving with nothing.
Writing is her way of examining her city and the world.
I actually make sense of the world through writing myself to clarity. I've always kept journals. I wrote in long form from a really early age. There's something comforting about words. I don't think that anything can happen or be real without words.
I am the poet, most likely a mask past the lies, the artistic syntax straight to the heart of the matter. The poet most willing to shatter your illusions of what poetry is, has been, will be, can do.
Dr. Nzinga is usually all over Oakland, writing plays, essays, teaching. But the day she found out she was going to represent the city as Poet Laureate, she was, like many of us during the pandemic, at home.
It began as a series of phone calls. The first one from the people who were in charge of the selection process. And that kind of landed like shock, really. And they tell you, don't tell anyone until we make the formal announcement. So I walked around for 2 to 3 days feeling like I was going to explode.
Oakland's Cultural Affairs Division created the Poet Laureate position with the hope of making poetry more accessible to everyone in the city, promoting what they call the transformative power of the art form.
I mean, the overarching goal is to bring more poetry to the people, right? The hope is that the Poet Laureate will not be cloistered in City Hall.
That's J.K. Fowler, who works on Oakland's Cultural Affairs Commission. He and Cultural Affairs Manager Roberto Bedoya created the Poet Laureate Search Program and led the Oakland Poet Laureate Oversight Committee, which reviewed the nominations and decided on a winner. Fowler noted that many Oakland community members have long wanted a poet to represent them.
The poet laureate is someone that is integrated, has been integrated in the culture and the world of Oakland. They're with the people, they're doing the work, and they're building alliances, they're building collaborations, they're working across mediums and various art forms to give voice to various types of artists.
I gave my babies composition books, and they turned them into rhyme books, and I learned that they had rhythm in their heads.
A deep involvement with Oakland's communities was one of the first things the selection committee looked for when deciding who would be named the poet laureate. Fowler sees the position as a point of reference for how Oaklanders understand their city and each other. For Dr. Nzinga, this understanding starts with a little tough love.
And so the truth isn't always easy or shiny. I've been known to rattle a cage or to say what people think but don't say in polite company. So it feels right that Oakland, with its history of connection to the Black arts movement, which supported the Black power movement, pushing the envelope, that I could be its poet laureate.
Movement gave movement to my movement, and I refuse.
The new poet laureate is a big believer in the collaborative power of poetry.
Poetry is a universal language. What happens, perhaps, if young Asian children and young Black children write poetry together? And they get to perhaps share their experiences of what violence looks like in their community. What would happen if Youth Speaks, you know, had events where people who are 80 or 90 read poems too? What happens if people from MFA programs who do poetry do it in juvenile hall with kids who are struggling, you know, maybe to get out of middle school, much less get into a higher education program? I don't think that there are any limits on how you can expand the inclusion of art, poetry, literature.
She believes words and poetry can do more than bring people together. They can also be a means of self-discovery. She knows this because writing helped her find her identity and her place in the world.
I discovered the canon of negritude in the Harlem Renaissance really early, and it felt like a home to me. Even before I fully understood the thing of being Black, that felt like a comfortable space. It felt like an echo. It felt like coming home. It felt like someone who knew my heart.
Never give up. We are the spirit of the suffering land. The hands of the many indigenous whose lands have been discovered, repopulated, drug into a sick modernity, screaming for the preservation of traditions lost to concrete McDonald's.
One of the committee's criteria for selecting the winner was, quote, understanding of civic narratives around equity, culture, and belonging. But belonging is a complicated idea for Dr. Nzinga, because for her, Oakland's history is one of disbelonging, of displacement.
When you ask me about home, I don't think we've ever had a resting place since they took us off the ships. The story of gentrification is the story of being a placeholder until the space is more convenient to someone who has the resources to use it, and you become collateral damage and you're moved around the chessboard. So Oakland holds a lot of history, a lot of energy for the tale of North American Africans and no resting place and the desire to sink down roots in spaces that were redlined. I don't know why I feel so emotional about this morning. I am fighting back literally tears. I think that in this moment, we don't all understand how beautiful and important the struggle song of Oakland is to liberation around the world.
We would rather have our children than to wear t-shirts that say rest in peace.
Oakland taught the world how to struggle in many ways. I mean, do youngsters realize why it's so dangerous for Black men to have guns and why they hand out felonies like Tic Tacs? because they're still trying to take back that moment when the Black Panther Party stood on the steps of the Capitol in Sacramento, legally armed, and said, "We will watch the police. You can't keep killing us.
We are this country's infected sore, its open wound, its festering, shameful myth of creation, locked in undeclared warfare for a fair share."
How will Dr. Nzinga reconcile her new duty of promoting belonging with being open about Oakland's history of displacement? Amiri Baraka, the former poet laureate of New Jersey, served as a guide in North Star.
I remember asking Baraka once, "How do we keep the door open? How do we move the mark?" His response was publish, publish, publish. So that translates as keep telling the story. I'm a people's poet. I'm going to tell the story the way the story go. So if that story continues to be our struggle to stay here, then that means I have to uplift the history, tell that story, and make it not be invisible as we go.
It's been winter in America for such a long time. Hope is strangling and we keep slip, slip, slipping on bloody concrete, kill one another for a chance to eat.
As Oakland's first ever poet laureate, Dr. Nzinga is part of a large historical moment for the city. And the momentousness hasn't been lost on her. The self-described people's poet has felt right at home in her new position ever since she found out she won.
I keep it 100, I cried a couple of times since then. I wake up every morning and I say to myself, I'm the poet laureate of Oakland. So it's still real new and real fresh. The bike's still shiny, the bells still work on it, everything. You know, I don't know when that part of it will wear off. It's a 2-year appointment. I'm hoping it don't wear off until the day after there's another poet laureate. I hope it feels like this the whole time.
Well, it takes more than you. Carry your burdens, but we got more than a few stars in our eyes and stripes on our back.
David Exumé produced that piece in 2021.
Trunks are lack and no idea how to get back. So we gotta go forward into the past. By the dream that surpasses the material and it's fit for saving souls. Here where the Constitution stops the toilet holes. And we ain't up on this, we freezing in this. Hungry in America, land of plastic dreams. Where's been winter since I landed empty-handed? Somewhere south of planet. God damn it. I'm trying to save our souls.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. You may know Josiah Luis Alderete as the host of our series, Bay Poets.
Buenos dias, familia. I'm Josiah Luis Alderete, and it's time once again for Bay Poets.
What you may not know is that Josiah opened and runs an independent bookstore in the heart of the Mission District called Medicine for Nightmares Bookstore and Gallery. And because this Saturday is the 11th annual National Independent Bookstore Day, we'll browse his shelves with this 2022 At Work story from reporter Elizabeth Aranda.
I have a lot of pride in my work.
How do you do it?
Sprays, masks, gloves.
I'm with the Swamp Team.
Hi, my friends, and how are you?
It's nice now with technology.
Pandora's box has been opened.
It's a beautiful way to make your living, but it's more work than I ever imagined.
I hop on the 48 bus in the Sunset neighborhood and get off at 24th and Folsom in the middle of the Mission District. On a sunny Saturday like this, everyone is outside. Taquerias and other colorful storefronts are full of customers. I walk for a few blocks to the new storefront of Medicine for Nightmares. In the window, there are books by Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz and Aneta Cruz. Because at this store, books by Black and Brown authors are central. Josiah Luis Alderete is one of the co-owners.
I'm a proud Spanglish-speaking Ocho poet who also happens to be a bookstore owner. I'm what you call one of the heads of the three-headed monster.
Josiah Luis and his business partners all come from creative backgrounds. Josiah Luis is a poet, Tan Can Cao is an artist, and J.K. Fowler started the Nomadic Press. The previous bookstore that occupied this space decided to close its doors in 2021. And despite being in the middle of a pandemic, Josiah Luis and his partners took a chance to open a new business.
When I found out that the space was going to be put up for sale, a space that had existed as a bookstore for 10 years in the neighborhood, you know, on one of the main streets in a beautiful Latinx neighborhood, like the idea of it not being a bookstore to me was just couldn't happen, you know? So I stepped up and found some other beautiful people that were willing to do the same.
He says he knows it doesn't make a whole lot of sense opening a small business right now.
It's probably one of the stupidest things you can do. You know, one of the most, but at the same time, this place is like a labor of love. It's like a leap of faith, you know? But I couldn't imagine this space not being a bookstore here in the neighborhood, you know, being a community center in the neighborhood, you know, being a place where people gather and see themselves reflected on the shelves, you know, see their cultura, see who they are on the shelves. Mission doesn't need another pour over coffee spot or yoga store, or, you know, and that, not to over exaggerate, it really could have happened that way. You know, the space could have turned into something that didn't serve the community, that didn't have knowledge of literature in it. So we had to do it.
For Josiah Luis and his partners, representation matters. He says all throughout high school, he never saw one book that reflected his culture in writing, in literature, or in English classes.
So for me, where I discovered my cultura was in bookstores.
In the poetry section of City Lights Books, he found the authors Jimmy Santiago Baca and Pedro Pietri.
There was that moment when I opened this book and I saw myself, I saw my cultura, I saw my brown skin in these words. And for me, this sounds kind of hokey. One of my dreams is that people come in here and that happens to them.
And it's already happened.
First week that we opened, this young Latinx mama came in with her daughter and her mom, right? So there was three generations of women in the store. And they all came up and they bought the book, they left.
He says a few minutes later, the mom came back.
She was crying. Estaba llorando. We said, what's the matter? And she said, we don't have this where I'm from. Like, my little girl found a book. My mom found a book. I found a book. She said, whenever I come back here, I'm going to come in the store. I'm bringing my husband next time. Like, and that was a profound moment for me because that was a little girl found herself in the literature. The mama found herself in the literature. The abuela found herself in the literature.
He says he wants that to happen every day.
It really is survival for us. The little niños, the chiquitos, the squinkles, they need a place where they can come and find children's books in their familia's language, where they can open these coloring books or these young picture books and see brown skin reflected back at them in the pictures, you know?
Josiah Luis says, because of the Beat Movement, a lot of people think of North Beach as the literary heart of San Francisco.
The Mission District played a huge part in the creation of literature. You know, this is La Calle 24 was an area where, like, poets from Nicaragua, poets from El Salvador, you know, queer poets, even New Yorican poets, you know, Afro-Latino poets.
Writers, playwrights, all of these artists came to the Mission, he says.
Oscar Zeta Acosta wrote right there on Valencia Street in an Azorro Hotel, you know. Juan Felipe Herrera, the amazing first Latino U.S. poet laureate, you know, he lived here. This was his spot, you know. The Brava Theater produced amazing plays. So for us, like, having a bookstore in this neighborhood is part of a legacy that we want to continue.
Josiah Luis talks about how bookstores have been and are white spaces.
The majority of bookstores are white-owned. The majority of the literature that you see in a lot of bookstores is, like, from the white gaze. It's dead white male shit. Even with, like, this idea of, like, niche literature, you know, you go into these bookstores where there's, like, an Afro-Latino section or, like, a black section or, like... But for us, like, those things aren't niche literature. Those things are our cultura.
Medicine for Nightmares is not just a bookstore. It has a gallery space and it hosts a variety of events throughout the month.
It's a series that's been going on for 4 years now that highlights, you know, Latinx authors and poets. We call it the decolonized poetic space.
The weekly zine called Tiny Day holds workshops here, and the neighborhood San Jarocho group practices in the gallery space.
It's really beautiful, like on the nights when Gayason practices, you know, we leave the door open and like they'll be playing their San Jarocho music in the back and you hear it and it kind of cascades out into this on the 24th Street. And it, you know, people walking by from the neighborhood, they'll poke their heads in and they'll literally come in because they hear this music, you know, this music that's from the barrio, that's also from Veracruz, that's also from them.
After spending a little more time with Josiah Luis Alderete, the unusual name of this bookstore, Medicine for Nightmares, is starting to make sense.
I gotta be honest, we stole it from a Sun Ra song.
The Afrofuturist musician.
I actually think he reached down from the other dimension and like put the idea in our heads, because we said the name and it was like a click, you know, and in a big way. And it was also, I mean, we liked it not just because it sounds good, but also because for like Black and Brown folks, literature is that. Literature is medicine against, you know, these everyday nightmares, these nightmares in North America of us being killed, these colonized nightmares that have existed for generations. You know, it really is that. Like literature for us is protection. It's like finding ourselves.
It's medicine and it's healing. In San Francisco, I'm Elizabeth Aranda for Cross Currents.
That was the co-owner of Medicine for Nightmares, Josiah Luis Alderete, speaking with reporter Elizabeth Aranda in 2022. You can find more stories from our At Work series at KELW.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Next, Berkeley author Adam Mansbach reads from his new book about a Brooklyn golem that comes to life. It's a reading from our pocket-sized book tour, New Arrivals.
In Jewish folklore, a golem is a creature 9-10 feet tall, sculpted out of clay, and brought to life by a rabbi or a learned man at a time of emergency. My golem's a little different. I'll give you the first paragraph of the book. Len Bronstein was not so much in need of a golem as he was in possession of a large quantity of clay and very stoned. For the last several years, Len had been stealing 1 5-pound brick of premium sculpting clay every week from the private high school in Brooklyn Heights where he worked as an art teacher. He didn't really know why. Len liked his job, liked his coworkers, got along fine with his students, both the merely wealthy and the famous actors' kids. Had Len asked, his department head probably would have invited him to take home all the clay he wanted. The school was awash in resources of every sort. The filmmaking lab had professional-grade cameras and editing suites. The fifth-grade math teachers had PhDs. If Len had been fortunate enough to attend a school like this, he would never have ended up a high school art teacher.
That was Berkeley author Adam Mansbach. His book, The Golem of Brooklyn, came out in September. New Arrivals is produced by KELW's Lisa Morehouse. You can find that episode and more at KELW.org/New Arrivals. Tune into Cross Currents Monday morning at 11. We'll ask, how does a lawyer provide equal representation to all?
Personally, I understand, but I'm dealing with a system that doesn't have a lot of compassion sometimes.
Cultural competence in our legal system. That's Monday morning at 11. And here's some music from a local band before we leave you. This is the East Bay band East Brothers. They'll be playing tonight at San Francisco's Bottom of the Hill. Today's Cross Currents team includes Steffi Puerto, Cheryl Kaskowitz, James Rowlands, Ganadi Joe Johnson, Victor Tense, Shirin Adil, Marissa Ortega Welch, Angela Johnston, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.